c'est avec toi. Parce que depuis toujours, chaque fois que je te voyais, je me disais que tu étais la femme que je désirais. Et vraiment que je désirais.
So this is a duck confit taco. It's flavored with harissa. There's a little bit of coriander yogurt, and then a tabbouleh side salad that goes on top of it for some real freshness, made of some Rebel Farm greens that we source locally, some cucumber, and some heirloom cherry tomatoes.
One of the things I love when I was cutting your dish that you don't think of as a home chef is just even using two different colored tomatoes. So you've got the golden tomato on there and then a red tomato. Along with your greens and everything, and it just is another way, I think, to make your dish more appealing, visually appealing.
Yeah, it's really indicative of just freshness, too. You know, you look at both of those, and, you know, you really feel like a gourmet home chef when you have two different colored tomatoes with the sun golds and the cherry reds, and then even cut two different ways, so.
Oh, yeah, see? Yeah. Detail I didn't notice, but love it in that you can kind of add to the appeal as a home chef just by cutting a different way or a different size and then also just using a different color.
Now, I have a question. What is the base?
So the base of this is essentially, it's, I think like every culture has their own version of a tortilla or a flatbread. So this is a paratha or a roti flatbread. It's essentially a flour dough with a good amount of like ghee or butter in it. And then it's formed into layers by folding it a couple different ways. And then you essentially fry it on a flat top with a little bit more butter. It's something that I really love. It's one of my favorites. I'm Trinidadian in background, so this is something I grew up with.
And this bread?
This bread.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes this dish really sing. You know, it's a great base. It's not a normal tortilla. It's, you know, not a normal toast. It's something that's, you know, oily, fatty, but in the good way. And then you have some really beautiful duck on there, some really, really live spices from North African harissa, some cooling effects from the yogurt and the tang from the yogurt, and then real good freshness from just really local vegetables like the tomatoes, the arugula, the mizuna, the cucumber. But it's a fantastic dish, and it's kind of indicative of what, you know, Chef Troy and myself are really inspired by, is just global cooking.
If you've just joined us, good afternoon. This is Mindy McNeil. I am joined in studio today for our Joy Wine and Spirits wine and food pairing by Chef Tristan of Mr. Tuna of Tag Restaurant Group. And of course, always the lovely Carolyn Joy. Welcome, Carolyn.
Thank you.
And we have been feasting on this wonderful taco. What is the full name of this taco, Chef Tristan?
So this is just simply the roti taco that we serve at Mr. Tuna. It's one of our most popular items. We originally do it with duck. We have changed it to lamb. We can do this with beef. The base is really an open canvas for what the dish really can be. But it's really just a beautiful balance of freshness and unctuousness and meatiness and at the same time a little bit of lightness.
So what does confit, when somebody sees that on the menu, what does that mean?
So confit is basically an old preservation technique of cooking something in its own fat. So in this case, duck was cooked in rendered duck fat, cured with salt and different spices, in this case a little bit of chili, and then cooked really slowly in the oven in its own fat till it's meltingly tender.
It is. It just, I love, it's like a, it's shredded.
Yes.
And so it makes it really easy to eat and helps with the harissa.
Right.
You know, so that you really get that in there.
Yeah, it really spreads the spice of the harissa amongst the palate.
Yeah, because it's not too hot. How much? So I'm sure you can make it hotter or
oh,
spicier.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. You can absolutely make it hotter. But once again, this dish is based on balance. So there's a yogurt to cool it down, the fat from the duck to cool it down, the tomatoes, the arugula, everything like that. It by itself might have a little bit of spice.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like tacos, or that term even, because people are using a different taco, like here you're using this Trinidadian,
but this is actually more Indian.
Oh, Indian bread?
Yes.
Okay. Have you seen that trend lately? Like, it seems like at least here for the food and wine pairing, we see a lot of tacos lately, which I love.
Absolutely. Tacos are such a great vehicle and just like a little vessel of happiness, right? Like who hates a taco? Nobody, you know? And then just so many cultures kind of have their own version of a taco if you really look at it. You know, there's bao buns with the little steam buns that look like tacos that are filled with, you know, pork and sauce. And, you know, there's these paratas that are filled with beans and meat. They're all over the place. And so it's kind of an old trend that's really, really coming back, or people are highlighting it a little bit more. They are delicious. They're portable. They're fast. They can be light. They can be heavy. You know, you can have them with wine. You can have them with beer. You can have them with cocktails. It's, you know.
When I originally looked at the recipe for this dish, I was like, beer. Yeah. Beer would be so absolutely good with this, because you've got all these contrasts. You've got the yogurt and the creaminess of that and the tanginess of that. And then you've got the spice of the harissa and then the meatiness. And then you've got your greens. And so there's a lot going on here that can be kind of hard to pair with a wine. But a beer that's really bright and clean and crisp can also just like wash it down. So that's interesting that you just mentioned beer.
Yeah.
And you didn't bring beer, though. You were able to pair it with a nice red. What did you bring?
I didn't bring beer. And I'm glad, actually, at first when you said you brought duck, because I was thinking you were going to bring lamb, I was a little nervous. Mm. But this wine actually works perfect with that. And this also would be actually really good with a white wine, which would kind of complement all of the green flavors and the vegetables and fruits in here. But the red wine goes great with the meat. One of the things that you would want to steer away from in this dish is having something that was too tannic or overly oaked, because that would compete with all the spices that you have in here. And to have a red wine that's crisp and bright and clean and fresh goes along with the fattier kind of, it's not a fatty meat, but it's definitely kind of a hearty meat.
Absolutely.
And then all that spice kind of cleanses your palate with each time. But the wine, we've had a couple of employees that have just returned from Portugal, and we've always been right on the cusp of having a really good Portuguese section, and then it kind of fizzles out a little bit. But now that we've had a couple of employees that have gone there, they're super excited about this really up-and-coming wine region. So this is a Portuguese wine. It's called Vina del Malhada. And Portuguese, I'm sure I'm butchering it, because when you hear Portuguese, they really blend all their language, and I can't replicate it at all. This is a little red wine that is from native grapes. It's also native yeast, and it's just really light and fresh and lovely. It's definitely a food wine. I think that, you know, it doesn't have the fruit that a lot of, like, if you're expecting a California Pinot Noir or Cabernet or anything like this, this is not that wine. So it's definitely, you might taste it at first, go like, this is a little bit tart or has a lot of red fruit. But when you have it with your food, I think it's a great compliment.
Oh, it's really beautiful, actually. Funny enough, a Portuguese wine was actually one of the first things I've ever really, really tried getting into this industry. I lived in Portugal for about a year when I was in high school. So, and I was sneaking wine and trying port, and I lived off Terceira in Lisbon for a little bit. So this is really reminiscent, and it is great. It's a great, great drinking wine. It's not competing, and it actually, yeah, like you said, it just cleanses the palate within every bite. Yeah. And
so this is produced right outside of Lisbon.
Okay.
It's in that Lisboa region. It's in the northern most part of it. And it looks like, from what I've read, I have not been to Portugal, but in talking to different people, there's really a diverse climate there. It depends on if you're by the coast, which is super windy and can be really humid. And then if you go inland, it's really, really hot and dry.
Yep.
And so this area is actually along the Atlantic, but it's kind of sheltered by these ancient pine forests. So you don't get all of the wind there. It is a little bit protected. And then it's the limestone soils, which you can really taste in this wine too. If you can kind of picture, you've seen chalk or you've seen limestone.
I was just going to say, it has that little bit of chalk to it.
Yeah. So sometimes you can kind of mix your senses almost and visualize what you're tasting. And it's not like pasty, like a milk of magnesia or anything like that, which would be kind of chalky. But if you can picture chalk or even a limestone when you run your fingers across it and it's kind of dusty, that's, I think, kind of the texture and the taste of this wine.
Okay, so I have a question then for you, Chef Tristan, because Carolyn was mentioning the name. So can you say it? Is it, or since, like, show us some of your Portuguese skills? Yeah, we need you. We're going to hold you to this now.
I think you did a great job. It's just, it's a Vina de Malhada, and you nailed it. I mean, that language is really hard.
Yeah, if you speak Spanish, you think you know it, but when you hear Portuguese people speaking, you get very confused.
Very, like, it's a difficult language, and I spoke very minimal Spanish when I was there, and that's the only way I was kind of able to get along, other than everyone basically speaking English. But it's a beautiful language, it's a beautiful country, and this is a really beautiful wine, and it's really representative of what they can produce.
Yeah. So I think what people normally think of when they think of Portugal is either port, obviously, which
Madeira.
Madeira, which is oxidated, port, which is a sweet fortified wine, or vino verde, which they produce, I was looking it up, 85 million liters. I mean, it's low alcohol, it's inexpensive. But now, in the last, I would say, 10 years or so, there's been this real effort by families. This is a fifth generation family that has been growing, has had this land since 1880s, to really focus on dry wine. So dry whites, dry reds, some sparklings, but to produce, you know, this is about 9,000 bottles, really small production wines, organically grown, which in Vino Verde, I think, can be really difficult because it's very humid there and you have a lot of mildew and fungus. But so there's this real effort. And they're very good values, and they have some amazing wines that are, you know, really old vintages, but still by standards on the world market in terms of like French wine or Burgundy or anything like that, some or aged Italian wine that might be 10 years old, that's going to be, you know, in the hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. This is, we're going to have some wines that are under $100 that have been aged a long time and really structured and long age-worthy wines. So it's really a fun, we're going to have a lot of tastings around Portugal. We just had one last week, and that went over great, but, you know, there's a lot of great values here, and it's fun to try these grapes that, you know, a lot of people can't even pronounce, but are great food wines too, because I don't know what the food scene is like there. I imagine a lot of seafood.
Well, I was going to say, the thing I like about Portugal the most is that I feel like they are one of the countries that really tailor their wine to their food. Vino Verde got sort of a bad rap for a long time, but I think it was a really, really great wine, especially now as, you know, tasting menus and food is a developing. But like when you go to Portugal and you have Vino Verde on a very coastal city, a very coastal country, you know, they eat a lot of seafood. And Vino Verde with, you know, a really beautiful escorda, which is a Portuguese bread stew with a lot of seafood in it, is a match made in heaven. You know, lots of garlic, lots of cilantro, tomato, lots of shellfish. It's an amazing thing, and it's so refreshing, especially on those windy coasts that are a little warm. And you having that with a Vino Verde is delicious. This wine as well is, you know, very tailored to, you know, if you had this with any of their cured meats, their beautiful Pata Negra pork, any of that that has a little bit of nuttiness, like this would not overpower any of that. This would absolutely complement, and it's not anywhere overpowering. Like this is tailored to food, to me, not like a French Bordeaux that's just like, I can just drink this wine.
Right.
You know, but this is beautiful.
And I would imagine this would go with a lot of dishes that you have at Mr. Tuna. I've been there a couple of times. I've had a lot of raw fish, and this would be great. I don't know if you do serve tuna as well.
Yeah, we do serve tuna.
And this would be great with that, because that can be a richer fish, and so I feel like you don't really want a rich, oily wine. But tell us a little bit more. You know, I wasn't expecting duck from Mr. Tuna, so.
Absolutely.
Or lamb from Mr. Tuna. And I'm so happy that you brought us something, because another trend that I've noticed here at the food and wine pairing is that we've had a lot of ceviche or crudos, or which I love. I love all that raw, fresh, bright fish and very balanced, delicate dishes. But I love that you brought something else. So
Absolutely.
Tell us about, you know, kind of the other things on the menu or what's happening. This must be your inspiration?
No, this is actually Chef Troy's inspiration.
Okay.
This is just something that when I was looking to work with him, I thought was very interesting, because I mean it represented something that I was very familiar with, you know, roti at a place called Mr. Tuna. And I think it's also important to know that like Mr. Tuna isn't necessarily a seafood restaurant. You know, it was named after Chef Troy's father. It was his nickname, Mr. Tuna, and it's basically the story of how Chef Troy had his childhood growing up in Hawaii. So we have a big, you know, oak grill representative of like barbecue and rotisserie and like big braised meats and rotisserie meats, as well as raw fish, You know, so you have that really light start to your meal, and you're kind of that heavier, satisfying communal as well with cocktails and wine. And it's very much a neighborhood sanctuary. So you can definitely come to Mr. Tuna and you can have oysters and you can have kampachi and hamachi and different sorts of raw fish. And at the same time, you can come and have a really big rotisserie pork collar that's brined and beautiful and caramelized and smoky. Confit duck, really fresh vegetable dishes. We have a really beautiful oak-grilled shiitake dish that's vegetarian. That's, you would never know there wasn't meat in it, and it's probably one of the best things ever. And a match made in heaven with white wines, just a lot of handmade pastas.
So do you get to create some of, do you get to just think, okay, I want to make this type of dish, and just do you get like full rein to get creative, or is it like a process, you and Chef Troy and another chef, or sit down and come up with some ideas, or how does that process go?
Yeah, we try to definitely keep it a, I think food tastes better when you talk about it. I mean, we're talking about it right now, and there's already emotions flowing, and people, you know, people always want to put their input, their experience in it. I definitely come up with a good amount of dishes. A lot of them I always run through Chef Troy. We always like to have a good conversation about it. What do you think this needs? More salt, more acid, what component, more texture, everything like that. And I'm sure, like, when in winemaking, it's almost the same thing. There's probably not just one person tasting it and saying, this is the final product. There's probably a small community of people, or of passionate people, who are tasting this wine and say, okay, next time maybe we should focus on this. Maybe next time we should use enamel-lined barrels or wood, or char the wood more. You know, it's that little bit of tweaking. So yeah, I mean, we come up with the dishes, we come up with the ideas, we talk about it, and then we come up with it as a team.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because when I was doing my research about this wine, I discovered that this is a vegan wine. Well, so what that means is people don't, you would normally think that all wine is vegan.
Yeah, what does that mean?
So
what?
Yeah, I'm like, you. My eyes lit up, but then at the same time too, I'm like, I thought fruit is vegan, so yeah.
So what we're talking about, you know, blending your wines or changing things so that it has a certain flavor profile. Well, this wine is vegan because it is not, it's fined, and what that means is sort of clarified. So, you know, wine is a living organic product that has lots of dead yeast and different matter in it that's kind of floating around, and nobody wants a really cloudy, hazy product. So what they do is they fine the wine. They take out these particulates in the dead yeast and let it all settle to the bottom and fine it out. So they can try filtering, but one of the most popular ways, or traditional ways, is to do it with egg whites.
Okay.
And so, or also some calcium, some milk products. The name is escaping me at the moment. So if you used milk, skim milk, or if you used egg whites, that would make this not vegan.
Interesting.
And so with... Yeah, so with this wine, they actually use clay bentonite and pea pod or pea powder. So that pea powder is a protein that attracts. I can't go through the whole process. I would have to refer to my notes and really think about it to have it right. But it's really interesting because what the fining does, it's not only just for, you know, the visual aspect, but it can also help with the colors, take out some of the phenols, take out some of the tannins, change the aroma a little bit if you have a little bit of funk in the wine. So there's different ways of tweaking the wine, you know, without manipulating too much, because a lot of, another trend that we're seeing, thankfully, is that people are making wines in the vineyard, so it's really about growing the grapes and how all of that is done. And then a lot of it is doing as little as possible. But these folks, they do fine their wine, which a lot of people do, and they don't do it with egg yolks, or not yolks, egg whites, or any milk products. So
that's amazing.
Vegan.
I mean, we do that with consommés. You know, we clarify with egg whites.
Interesting.
You know, we take a stock, we add egg whites, we add some flavors, and then we basically simmer it, and it comes out crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
So that's amazing. I never knew that. And then I guess the cool thing is also the milk. I've done milk clarifying with cocktails before, which also takes out a lot of, like, the acridness and the hotness of the alcohol, basically like lacto-mellows as my right. own word I just come out with, but that's amazing.
I do have a question. What is, okay, because for me, I'm trying to move towards veganism, and because I've noticed that a lot of the dairy just kills me sometimes, but what is milk clarifying? I don't understand what that means.
And it was casein, that's what I was trying to okay. think of. Yeah. Or gelatin, sometimes they use.
Right,
so
yeah.
that would be another non-vegan. But I wouldn't think that that would really affect somebody who is drinking wine. I mean, obviously there's no lactose in the wine. But so what this is doing is it's drawing all those particulates out. And then you siphon that part off. Or you actually siphon the wine off.
Exactly, yeah.
And leave that other part. But some people, you know, don't want any. If you were a really strict vegan...
Absolutely,
this yeah. would be. And so, and when they add the egg whites, they actually put it in a solution of water and salt mm-hmm. and then add the egg white and then add it to the wine, stir it up and leave it for a bit. And then it starts to attract all of those other particulates that they don't want in the wine. It sounds similar to what you would do with a broth.
It sounds very similar,
and then you have
except
a,
we heat
a,
ours.
And then do you siphon that off?
And then we siphon it basically yeah. from the bottom down. So mm-hmm. it becomes something called a raft. So as you heat it, the egg white proteins basically capture all of the particulate, and then it rises to the top. And then everything at the bottom is clear. So we always siphon it from the bottom, and then we leave the top.
So I have another quick question about broths.
Sure.
So when you are making a broth and you have like the bones and things in there and you get like this frothy foam on the top.
It's uncooked protein.
Okay.
So that is protein.
Okay. So I guess if you want the protein, you would leave that in there. But is that sort of seen as a, not a bad byproduct, but...
We call that the scum.
So scum, in French, yes, it's perfect.
Yeah.
That is the scum. That's the same scum that's on the hot tub.
Absolutely, yeah. Dirty pro. Yeah, that's in French, it's called, when we remove that, it's called dépoulage, and it's to remove the scum, and that's basically all of the, it's basically blood and marrow
yeah.
and blood cells and stuff that gets attached to proteins and rise to the top.
Yeah. So you want to skim that
you
off.
You want to skim that out.
Gotcha.
It's not the most attractive.
So someone was mentioning that you got to participate in Chopped.
Yes. Before I moved from New York, I was asked to participate in the Food Network show Chopped. So I did that last year right before I decided to move to Denver, and it aired in December.
How was that experience?
It was great. It was phenomenal to be in a competitive environment with other people kind of passionate in the same thing. It was kind of good because I also won. So,
what was your dish?
So it's like the base of that show is it's a mystery basket, so you don't mm-hmm. know what you're getting. And so there's three rounds, and each round you can either, if it's good enough, you move on to the next round, and if not, then you get, I guess, quote unquote, chopped off. So I was fortunate to be able to go through all three rounds and then win. And the theme of my show ended up being basically all offals. So I had liverwurst and liver the first one with calamari. And then the next one I had beef kidneys with pine nut cookies and stuff. And then the last one was like goat and goat milk for a dessert.
Mm-hmm. So. I never know how you come up with, like there's such odd ingredients to think about what you're going to make and to prepare it in that amount of time seems challenging.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you're saying liver and kidney, and I'm just like, ugh. And then to make a dessert out of goat.
Well, goat's milk, yeah.
And goat milk? Goat's milk, yeah. But goat, I'm like, okay, how do you, yeah, like what, I mean, they give it to you, and you're like, okay, what do I do? Or does your brain just start just going crazy here?
I mean, it's just, you try to draw from past experiences, and you try to equate every ingredient into something that you've actually worked before. Liver is something I happen to have, like, worked with before. So that was always really, that was fine. And then I had like liverwurst, which, you know, I mean, I eat pate plenty of times. And then calamari was another ingredient in there. So it was just kind of like blending things together. There's a Portuguese dish that has shellfish and liver together. So that's kind of something I kind of drew from. The beef kidney was something that I hadn't necessarily worked with before. But I'd worked with pork kidneys and stuff before, so I tried to treat them the same way. And yeah, just I used the cookie as a starch, like as if, like, you know, meat and potatoes. And, you know, I made like pine nut cookie puree, and it was fun. You know, I was fortunate to be able to go through it and have some experiences to draw from. And yeah, your mind does definitely race, and you kind of run around like a madman, and you know, and just hope at the end that your experiences just kind of bring you out to something that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So.
Wow. Okay. So we are in the midst of a celebrity, Carolyn, this week. Okay. A celebrity chef. Thank you so much. Mr. Tuna is located where, Chef Tristan?
So it's in the Rhino District, 3033 Brighton. You'll probably recognize us by all the construction that's around us. But we're very much open through construction, so come and see us. If you're into raw fish or rotisserie meats over Oak Fire, handmade pastas, we're the people to come see. You know, we're really striving to be a neighborhood sanctuary, and we really want to bring people in so that they can share, you know, interested food, lots of culture, and lots of really good times for great music.
And I know, Carolyn, you've had a small history with Mr. Tuna. They were at a chili cook-off that
they
you had?
They were at our last year's chili cook-off, and they definitely placed in the top five. It was delicious. So, and I've been to your establishment several times and loved it every single time. And I also like that you can, because sometimes people are like, oh, sushi doesn't fill me up, which I find strange. But so to know that you have heartier dishes there, which I haven't explored because I've always been on the other end of the spectrum, but now after having this dish, I would love to come back and try some different things.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we'd love to have you again at the chili cook-off next October.
Carolyn, I do have a quick question because we were talking about vegan wine. Are there labels then that you could I, or somebody who's a vegan, walk in and start looking, you know, go through maybe your establishment or another place and start looking for vegan wine labels?
So we have a really great, it's called Point of Sale, which Mason developed, one of our employees. And it tells you, you know, obviously what the wine is, what the vintage is, any press that it might have. And then at the bottom, we always indicate if it's sustainable, sustainably grown, organic, biodynamic, if it's a staff pick, salmon safe. There's a lot of different designations for wine. I cannot remember, to be honest, if we have vegan, but I know that we have quite a few vegan wines. So generally organic is, I think, a step in the right direction. And so if I were a vegan, I'd start looking for that initially.
Okay, so here we are, the month of March. Are you going to be, this wine in particular, will you be sampling it this evening?
Absolutely. We're going to have this along with three other wines. And like I said, we've kind of focused on Portugal this month, so we've already had one tasting. But we've got probably one of the best selections right now, an opportunity for you to try, you know, very inexpensive, light-bodied to very full-bodied collector-type wines. So it's really fun to come and explore a different country. It's a shame to be in one box when you don't have to be. And, you know, this is a great food wine. It would go along with everything that we've talked about, and braised meats, sashimi, yeah. Certain fishes, pasta. I wouldn't pair it with chocolate, but other than that, it's a great food wine. And yeah, come in and talk to Mason. He just came back from Portugal, and another one of our employees, Pat's been there two or three times now, just absolutely loves it, loves the wine country, loves everything that it's about. Very approachable country, so come in and check it out.
Great. Well, I thank you both very much for being here this afternoon and speaking with me, and great, let's have a nice little salute.
A nice little clink.
Cheers.